This has been a very, very special day in Yeshiva with two very special and very different guests. I'm not sure if Rosenzweig is aware, but earlier this morning, the Yeshiva was privileged to host Rav Shaul Alter, the Ger Rosh Yeshiva, who is a world-famous Talmud Chacham, really a very, very special individual. And we were privileged to host him. This is his first time not only in the Yeshiva, but despite requests from all over the country over the last few years, as far as I know, this was the first Hesder or Tzioni Mossad that he had ever been in as a guest, even though the community is very close to him. So that was very, very special for us to have a guest for the first time. The very special schluss we have now of hosting a Rosenzweig is the opposite. This is not a guest who's coming for the first time. This is somebody who's part of the family and someone who we are zocha to have as regularly as his travel and Yeshiva University allows. And Baruch Hashem, we've hosted him many times, and there is something special about having a guest for the first time, and there's something maybe even more deeply special about having a consistent and ongoing relationship with somebody like Rav Rosenzweig. I'll just add by way of not only personal introduction for my Rebbe, but really something that I think reflects everything that we're trying to do with you here in Yeshiva and in Yonei Chanukah, and that is that one of my, it's hard to say my favorite, but one of my favorite shiurim and ideas that I've heard so many times from my Rebbe has to do with the unique nature of Mahadrin on Ner Chanukah. And in addition to the magnificent Lomdus, Rav Rosenzweig also has a very beautiful Hashkafic analog to that shiur, and he describes Chanukah as the holiday of religious maximalism. And in many, many ways, for all of us who have been zocha to be the Talmidim of Rav Rosenzweig, we know that this really is characteristic of his entire approach to chinuch, of education, of being a Rebbe, always pushing his Talmidim to strive higher, to do better, and giving us the skills, hopefully, to do greater and to jump higher than we ever could have on our own. Many of you who I interviewed over the last few years may recall at different points in our conversation speaking exactly about that point, that the reason that one would come to yeshiva like Gush, even though there will be difficulties and struggles, is that we won't lower the bar for you. We will teach you how, hopefully, to jump over the high bar. This is a Masorah that we have from Rav Lichtenstein. I imagine that's in no small part where Rav Rosenzweig himself developed this approach to raising Talmidim. And it really is a very symbiotic approach that we try to have with you and that so many of us gain from our Rebbe Rav Rosenzweig. And therefore, personally, and of course, on behalf of the yeshiva, it is such a special schluss to once again welcome our Rebbe, the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Rosenzweig.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here, as always. I do have a little bit of an unusual situation. You know, I'm not known for my koach ha-tzimtzum necessarily, although I claim that I have it. It just doesn't express itself in a quantitative way. But because we came a little bit late because of traffic, and I've been giving a lot of shiurim in another context about the mitzvah d'oraisa of tefillah, so I actually have to finish the shiur by 4:18 in order to make mincha. That sound right? So I don't know whether, that kind of koach ha-tzimtzum I'm capable of, but I'll try at least to discuss the topic, or at least one aspect of the topic, at least some highlights of the topic and some suggestions of how to continue to explore it as we go forward. Before I do, first of all, I want to thank Rav Gottlieb for his beautiful introduction and to acknowledge also the presence of many other Talmidim, some of the Ramim here, including Mani Ben Chutin, Rav Schreiber, Rav Yair Khan, who I saw before. I don't want to start mentioning all the names. If I mention all the names, I'll leave somebody out, and that's certainly not my intention. But each one, a very special friend, a very special Talmidim from different Tkufot. And, it's really with a great sense of personal nachas. I've been saying this a lot, but I'm going to different yeshivot, and I have Talmidim who are Ramim in the different yeshivot, but I say it because it's true, but it's a very special pleasure, privilege, really to be in a place where your own Talmidim are making such impact, and that sense of Mesorah, in terms of my own relationship with them, is something that is hard to articulate, but it's something that is very deeply felt. Even though this year will be very brief, much briefer than I think typically I'm known for. I think slated to be here for Shabbos, and look forward to that. And in addition to meeting some of you later in groups or individually, I hope that there'll be opportunity to speak again over Shabbos, and also to get to know you better. And I'll be back here after Mincha also just a little bit as well. So the topic I want to speak about very briefly is kind of an introductory topic. I'm told that you're learning Masechet Bava Kamma. It was very hard to extract that information to get that intelligence, but I use my personal family contacts indirectly, so it is true, right? The yeshiva is learning Bava Kamma. And I wanted to select a broader topic within Bava Kamma that I think has implications throughout the Masechta, even in its various parts. So what I wanted to speak about is the relationship between the Isur of Lahazik, whether there is an Isur Lahazik, what the relationship is between that Isur and the Chiyuv Tashlumin of Nezek, and that, of course, is a theme that is relevant not only to the beginning of Bava Kamma, Nizkei Mamon, and of course Adam HaMazik, we'll talk about some distinctions in a minute, but the extended Bava Kamma, which is Geneva and Gezela and Chavala and so on, but really is a leitmotif in all of Nezikim, including Bava Metzia and Bava Basra, parts of Sanhedrin, etc. So I like to introduce this topic by a little bit of Divrei Hashkafa, because I think that the Hashkafa of this topic is very much integrated, with the Halakha, as Baruch Hashem is often the case. And that's with the Gemara on Bava Kamma Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, which I think captures the essential issue. The Gemara here says that Amar Rav Yehuda, Haiman de Boilim have a chassida, that if a person wants to cultivate the identity as a chassid, l'kayim bili de nezika, that he should fulfill matters of nezika. And then the Gemara goes on to say that Rava Amar mili de avos va Amar le mili de bracha. So again, I'm going to be very brief, in this shir. We will lose something, hopefully, from not being able to be expansive, but you don't have any choice. But the concept of a chassid is typically understood in Chazal as referring to Lifnim Meshuras Adin, number one. So if we're talking about Lifnim Meshuras Adin, the implication is that we're talking about something that is not quid pro quo or logical, not natural, it's not default, something that you would expect or anticipate. And typically, you wouldn't associate Nezikin with that, merely the Nezikin, because Nezikin is... number one, the area of law which is the most elemental and basic. If you want to have a society, which promotes minimal coexistence, where it's not, as Chazal say, ishes chavero chayim b'la'o, where people aren't just competing and killing each other, then you have to have dine nezikin. At minimum, you have to have the laws of damages. Most legitimate societies or cultures have to have more than that. They have to have a civil legal system, and many have. And the halakha itself recognizes non-Jewish civil law. That's something I hope to speak about a little over Shabbos. That's the concept of dinin, about which there's a debate, but we'll discuss that. So the idea that the Gemara would suggest that somebody is a chassid because he is fulfilling mili de nezikin is, on the surface at least, surprising. Especially when you consider either the alternatives or the other members of this club, and that is mili de brachos, mili de avos. Avos is about ethics, certainly qualifies for lifnim meshuras hadin, no question about it. And brachos is about the profound relationship that we have with the Ribbono Shel Olam, the relationship between living in the real world, kol anenim and ol mazeh below bracha arizim moal. The idea of Lashem Haaretz and Lo'o, at the same time Lashamayim, is one thing, and Haaretz Nasan Livnei Adam, fulfilling the mission of Avram Avinu to make the Ribbono Shel Olam Elokei Hashamayim, but also Elokei Haaretz. So the idea that brachos, if you master it, you understand it deeply, profoundly, not only if you make the right brachos, but if you understand why you're making them and what the implications are, that that makes you someone who could qualify as a chassid is understandable. And the idea that, you know, somebody who masters the, you know, a moral sensitivity that is delineated in avos is somebody who qualifies as understandable. But nezikin, I say, seems to be a minimalist requirement. It's a universal requirement. It's something that is endemic to just efficient human existence and experience. However, if you, you know, go back a little bit, you can appreciate what the Gemara means. And this provides the framework for our discussion today and I think for understanding Nezikin more generally. It sounds like a big statement. Tan Rabbana, the Gemara says earlier, Chasidim HaRishonim, I like to be Korei L'Mafrei a little bit sometimes, Chasidim HaRishonim, Hayumatsnim, Kotoseim, Kuskuchi Oseim, Betosad Oseim, Umamikim Lehem Gimel Tzvachim, Kineshali Akev HaMachresha. Then the Gemara says, Rav Shesha es Shadiluhu Benura, Rava Shadiluhu Bedagelis. This comes before that statement that I read earlier. So what we're being told is that the Chasidim HaRishonim used to, in their own property, they used to make sure that no one who would come into their property from the outside, legally, not clear in the Gemara, maybe even illegally, even somebody who has no right to be there, they wanted to make sure that their property would not be a source of nezek for outsiders, maybe even illegal outsiders. And therefore, if they had needles or glass or something sharp, shards, whatever it is, they would bury it in the ground. And some people say they threw it in the fire, and some people said they had it chopped up by throwing it into the, you know, the rapids of the river, etc. So clearly, the nezikin that we're speaking about is a different kind of nezikin than the one I described with respect to the minimalist requirement of any civilized society. Here we're talking about a concept of nezek in which people are being asked, an owner is being asked to sacrifice his own rights, to limit his own license in his own property, maybe even to forestall nezek, not only to an outsider, but maybe even to an outsider who, you know, doesn't have any explicit permission to be there. In other words, the concept of being a chassid and being mekayim mili de nezikin, normally when it comes to nezikin, you're not mekayim mili, you want to avoid doing something that creates a hezek and makes you chayid betashlumim. But there is an aspect of nezikin in the halachic perspective that is lekiyume and that is chassidus. Harchakas nezakin highlights that even nezek can be a reflection of Avodas Hashem and Tzelem Elokim and Kedoshim Tiyu. And if that's the case, I'll speak much more about this aspect over Shabbos, it's always fascinating to explore the relationship between Jewish law and non-Jewish law, especially when the halacha endorses the non-Jewish law for non-Jews, like Dinam HaBnei Noach. And I believe, and I'll try to explain this over Shabbos, the more you have an overlap, the more you can often discern, you know, subtle or in some cases even more obvious, important differences of principle between legal systems. And in that sense, nezikin can be a foundation for chassidus almost like no other area of law, we'll expand over Shabbos, precisely because for most cultures it has a more efficient and a much more minimalist negative kind of orientation. And dafka there, the halacha shines in its expectations. If this is true, so then we should take a bigger look at the relationship between two aspects of nezikin, namely the chiyuv tashlumin on the one hand, and at the same time the concept of mitzvah or of isa. And just, you know, to explain what we mean by that, on the one hand, might have thought that Dine Nezikin really are an area of law which is not governed by chiyuvim or isurim, you know, at all. After all, the foundation, the focal point is money and loss. And in that respect, it's very much, as I indicated before, a kind of a quid pro quo, by which I mean you damage somebody, you cause him a loss, you take something that is his. So the fair, just thing under those conditions is that you make him whole, you restore his loss, you compensate him, etc. All of that doesn't necessarily require psukim, and certainly doesn't require or doesn't violate necessarily isurim. If I damage your property and I pay you, so then we are all, back to where we were. And indeed, if you look at Parshas Mishpatim, which is the parsha, the locus classicus of Masechet Bava Kamma, basically, and certainly the Avos Nezikin, that's where you really, can identify the Avos and the particular unique dinim of each Av, all comes from the drashos of Parshas Mishpatim. What you will find is that there's no explicit Iser in the Torah, explicit, I'll get back to the implicit a little bit later on, but it's not clear that there is a prohibition to be mazik your neighbor at all. In sharp contrast, when it comes to Geneva, when it comes to Gezela, when it comes to Chavala, when it comes to Rotzeach, the bedfellows, if you will, of Masechet Bava Kamma, Masechta begins, as we know, the first six prakim are about Adama Mazik and Nizkei Mamon, and then you have Meruba, and then later the two Gozels, which are about Geneva and Gezela, and then you have Perek about Kabbalah. So the other members of Bava Kamma, or the other members of the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka, Sefer Nezikin, all have explicit psukim in the Torah that identify an Isa. When it comes to Mazik, you have to look very carefully, and it's not clear whether that search really yields any result, any clear, independent Isa. And indeed, the Mabit in his Sefer Kiryat Sefer, on the Rambam, his Peirush on the Rambam, in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon Perikei Halacha Aleph, an important context, as we will see, and Hilchos Shcheinim Perikhes, and Hilchos Shcheinim Perikhes Halacha Aleph, in the context of Harchakas Nizakin, seems to dismiss the idea that there really is an independent Iser Lahazik Eskabero, at least in a situation where there will be Tashlumin. If there's Tashlumin, it's quid pro quo, and maybe there are Isurim Durabanan that are involved, argues the Mabit, but not Minator. We'll see that others disagree. On the other hand, we certainly have a strong moral intuition that, somebody doesn't have the right, to trample on other people's monetary rights, even if he's willing to make him whole and compensate him after the fact. We don't consider it to be ethical behavior or moral behavior in particular, if somebody is constantly, damaging, even if he's top dollar, repaying, his neighbor. That seems to be an unacceptable conduct or code of conduct. And consequently, it would seem we have an instinct that there should be Isurim when it comes to Nizakin. The only question is, are we talking about specific Isurim that are unique, and target Mazik or Nezek in one way or another, as opposed to suggesting that certain behavior, let's say, comes under a much more general or broader rubric, things like the Ahavta Kamocha or Hashavas Aveda. We've shown him already the Rama, and the Ritva Rama, the Ritva Miksav Yad, and Gittin, Daphne Gimel, speaks about the Ahavta Lo'yacha Kamocha. The Adrama speaks about that in the context of Harchakas Nezakim in Baba Basra. The Rush in a Tshuva speaks about, Durachecha Darchim Noam. Some of the Achronim speak about Lifnei V'Lasitei Mitchell, the Rashash and others about Hashavas Aveda. So it could very well be that there is a violation of an Iser when you're involved in Nezek, a causing behavior. But it's not a prohibition of mazik per se. It's a broader, chiyuv or iser, which also encompasses, mazik type behavior. And if that's all we're dealing with, Sefer Chinuch speaks about this. If that's all we're dealing with, that would certainly be significant. But it would leave us with the conclusion that fundamentally, Nezikin is about money. It's about quid pro quo. And as long as you are, in the end of the day, equalizing the person's loss, by compensating him, there really is no independent Iser at all. This question, whether or not there are Isurim in Mazik, whether we look at it as a Maisa Beira or just as a source of Chiyuv Tashlumin, also may inspire us to make certain, you know, fundamental distinctions. For example, it's worthwhile considering whether there's a distinction between being mazik in a case where you're chayiv tashlumin and in a case where you are pater mitashlumin. Sometimes you do something, you trigger, it could be a grama, you know, if you hold, you know, we pass in the doin din of the garmi, but if you hold the low doin din of the garmi, or grama din is zaken as pater, or hezek she'eino nikar, let's say lo shmei hezek, you know, things of that sort. So you can do things that cause a loss and that technically do not trigger a chiyuv tashlum. Which is more likely to constitute a maisa avera to trigger an iser? An act of hezek that creates a chiyuv tashlumin or not? And here we find mixed evidence. And logically, the issue is as follows. From one perspective, you might argue that anytime you do an hezek, which is mechayiv tashlumin, so then you kick in the quid pro quo, you know, principle, meaning it's about money, but the money is covered. It's far worse, you know, if you, you know, technically are potter, as a chenikar, grama, let's say, tamun bekelim, shein veregel versus harabim, etc. You do something which causes a loss and you get off scot-free. So the idea that you're not allowed to do that, though, and at the end of the day, your actions are not even compensated for, and therefore they certainly should trigger Yisurim. Certainly this would be the case for the Yisurim Klalim, like V'Aftal Re'acha Kamocha, and Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazen, Ashav Saveda, and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, a strong case could be made for a kind of counterintuitive perspective, according to which, if you do something that doesn't trigger Tashlum and you violate an Yisur, if you do something that is fully covered, you know, by the, you know, Bezdin process of the law, then it's just about, you know, paying, you know, sending the check, and so on. On the other hand, you might say the opposite, and that is, the reason that you're patur, in many cases, at least in Grama, Hezek Shein Ikar, possibly in some of the Pturim of the Avos as well, that's a topic that needs to be discussed independently. What about, you know, Tomun Be'esh, and, you know, and Kalim and Bibor, and so on and so forth, and certainly Shein Veregel, Birshus HaRabim, are these logical Pturim, are they Xeris HaKasuv Pturim? But you might argue, at least, that whenever there's Chiyuv Tashlumin, that reflects a more intense level of responsibility, much more of a Maisa Hezek as opposed to a, you know, cause without a Maisa. I didn't do it. What I did set off a chain of events. You know, there's a causal, you know, chain. There are numerous factors that contribute to this end result, and therefore I'm not held, you know, sufficiently responsible for Tashlumin. It also dilutes the intensity and therefore, you know, the you know, impermissibility of my action. So in this perspective, you might say, the more Chiyuv Tashlumin, the more likely that there is a parallel or maybe even an integrated Iser as well. Rashi in Masechet Gittin, I'm not going to read inside a lot of things because I'm really, really running, but on Daf Nun Gimel of a base, Rashi seems to say that if Hezek Nikar was Shma Hezek, then you would also violate an Iser. Because Hezek Shein Nikar is Lo Shma Hezek, and they're your Patur, so there's only an Iser Drabanan. There's no Issa Doraisa. Although, if you look at the, again, the Ritva Rama on that, Gemara challenges this Rashi. And in general, it's hard to know whether what Rashi meant to say was the Chi of Tashlumim implies a more intense Maisa Veira, and therefore it's Asur. But in the case of Hezek Shein Nikar, it's more than that. It could be that if Hezek Shein Nikar is Shma Hezek, so then we have expanded, not just said that causing you a loss is enough to be mechayiv yutashlumim, but it could be that we're redefining what constitutes chefta shel nezek. And that, of course, opens up a whole issue in its own right, whether it's garmi or grama or hezek shein nikar. There are really two issues. One is whether or not being the first in a causal chain or the primary in a causal chain, is that enough to be mechayev tashlumin? Or like how do you define a maisa of hezek, a chetza shel nezek, a bailus in nezek, etc. But either way, it's interesting to note, and we'll have a little bit more chance to review back on this issue later on, that there seems to be a machlokes rishonim already, whether or not tashlumin is more of a reason to presume that there is an iser, or dafka less of a reason. Another potential chiluk may be between Adam Amazik and Niske Mamu. And again, we don't have time, so I'll also say, maybe between different types of Niske Mamon as well. The more that we understand, Chiyuv Tashlumin to be a function of a Maisa Hezek in a more direct way, the idea that, you know, that's not only an action which legally triggers, you know, economic consequences, but that also that might constitute formally a Maisa Aveira, that becomes more of a real consideration. Whereas, if you have something which may be Chayv B'Tashlumin, but it's a more distant, aside from the consideration I mentioned before about making the other party whole, but if we're talking about, just to make it clear, if we're talking about Adam HaMazik, where the individual himself is directly responsible for the Hezek, that, you know, seems to be on the border of Chabalah. The idea that that would also be a Maisa Aveira is very reasonable. The idea that your shor, or even more so, your boar, you know, is responsible for Nezek, you weren't even there. You know, the most you're culpable for is the lack of Shmira, or a diluted level of responsibility. That might be sufficient to trigger Mamon, but the idea that that would be considered a Maisa Aveira, or subject to an Iser, becomes less plausible. The Shi'iltos, the Shulchan Aruch, all suggest that there is an Iser. The Rambam and the Tur, that there is an Iser only in Adam HaMazik. The Shi'iltos, Shulchan Aruch, only bring Iser in those contexts. While the Rambam and the Tur, I'm not going to read it, it's on the Maror Makomos, and the Rambam, even in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, Parakei Halacha Aleph, the Tur in Simen Shin Ayin Ches, suggest that there is an Iser Lahazik, or speak in that language, Bein Adam HaMazik, Bein B'Nizkei Mamon. The Rambam, interestingly enough, has this Shita, even though he does fundamentally distinguish between Adam HaMazik and Nizkei Mamon. The Mishnah, of course, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, discusses, you know, the Arba Avos Hazikin. One of them is Maveh. There's a debate in the Gemara whether Maveh is Adam HaMazik or Shein. And the Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos chimes in and tells you that, in his opinion, Maveh is Shein, it's not Adam HaMazik. I always thought it was very tamu. Why does the Rambam need to take a position on that matter, especially since Adam HaMazik is also certainly Chayav? But the Rambam, the Shitaso, took the entire din of Adam HaMazik outside of Hilchos Nizkei Mamon. If you look at the Torah in Shulchan Aruch, they integrated, as do the first six prakim of Bava Kamma, Nizkei Mamon and Adam HaMazik. The Rambam, in a codification Chiddush, basically took Adam HaMazik outside of Nizkei Mamon. Nizkei Mamon is only about Nizkei Mamon. Then comes, you know, in the Rambam's presentation, you have Gneva and Gezela, so there's even a Hafsek. And then in Hilchos Chov HaMazik, that's where the Rambam deals with Adam HaMazik. And I believe that his comment of Pirush Mishnayos reflects that as well. For the Rambam, there is a greater affinity between Chov HaMazik than there is between Mazik and Nizkei Mamon. Nonetheless, he believes there's an Iser, and I'll try to explain in a couple of minutes what I think the Rambam's view on the Iser really is. It's interesting to note that while the Rambam believes that there is an Iser, I'm going to limit my discussions mostly to the Rambam because we don't have time for the rest. It's interesting to note that while he formulates an Iser, while he formulates a minyan mitzvos, shor, bor, the avos nezikin, he omits any parallel mention to Adam HaMazik. Moreover, what's particularly interesting about the Rambam's presentation is the fact that he, typically, when there is an Iser that is associated with a particular action, so the Rambam's, you know, again, systematic, consistent, presentation sensibility is to formulate the Isser at the very beginning of the halacha. Almost every time there's a mitzvah or an Isser that is associated with a particular category of halacha, with some important exceptions, but exceptions which I think always prove the rule, the Rambam will begin, you know, it'll be reflected in the Koteret, there'll be a Sefer Mitzvos, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, or Perek Aleph, somewhere between Halacha Aleph and Gimel, the Rambam will weigh in on the matter of this particular Isser. However, in Hilchos Niskei Mamon and in Hilchos Chov L'Mazik, where the Rambam does mention the concept of an Isser L'Hazik, he only mentions it in both cases in the fifth chapter of each. In other words, in Perek Aleph, Man V'Kar Shemei, it's missing. Only in Perek He, and I'll explain why in just a minute, in my opinion, only in Perek He do you have this phenomenon. And the same thing is true in Hilchos Chov L'Mazik. Chovel he mentions earlier, although again in an unusual way, but that's not for now. But the Isser L'Hazik Chaveiro is actually only mentioned in Perek He Hilchos Chovel. And that certainly requires explanation. If you look about parallel about Geneva and Gzela and Rotzeach and so on, the Rambam is very upfront. So basically, part of the puzzle is the psukim in the Torah are very unclear. If you look at Tosis on Daf Beis of an Aleph in Bava Kamma, Tosis suggests, you know, that there are Makoros even for Adam Amazik, but maybe in Parshas Emor and not in Parshas Mishpatim. Either way, it's very not explicit. The Parsha itself is very non-explicit of Adam Amazik. And in general, there is no explicit, unquestioning Makar in the Torah. And the Rambam, as I mentioned, does think there's an Isser, both for Niskei Mamon and Adam Amazik. But he mentions them only in a very oblique way. And the question is why? So I'd like to take one step back for a minute. The idea that there are Isurim in Mazik is reflected by different Gemaras. The Gemara, for example, in Kiddushin, on Daf Mem Beis, and the Gemara in Bava Basra, in Bava Kamma, on Daf Nun Aleph, you know, speaks about Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira when it comes to, lighting a match and burning down someone's field. So if we take literally Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, assuming that is limited to a real formal Aveira, the implication is that Eish is an Aveira. On Nun Aleph and Nun Gimel, in Bava Kamma, the Gemara speaks about Bor Shel Shudfim. The Gemara says, like, if you have, you know, a Mishaleach, you know, two Mishalchim, they're Shudfim, and they set up a Shliach, you would apply the principle of Ein Shliach Advar Vera with respect to Bor. So that's one example. The Mechilta, you know, discusses Ein Onshin Min Adin with respect to Bor. The Rajba suggests that it's only Bor, and that's important, but Balei Tosis already asked a question. You can't read the first mission of Bava Kamma without wondering what happened to the rule of Ein Onshin Min Adin. But if you take literally the category of Ein Onshin Min Adin, this concept of Onshin, it sounds like the Tashlume Mamon in certain Nizke Mamon are based on Isurim. The Mishnah Lama Dalanum based in Bava Kamma speaks about Kamalei Bedraba Minei. Like what happens if on Shabbos somebody burns down someone else's field, he's Pater Mitashlumin. If his animal does it, the animal's Chayiv. If the person does it on Shabbos, he is patur, because of the principle of Kibbalei B'drabim, which of course is rooted in the Limud, Mishum Risha Achas Atomachaivo, V'i Atomachaivo Mishum Shtei Rishios. It sounds like burning down someone's field is rishios. I mean, colloquially it is, but if you're talking about Kibbalei B'drabim and you assume a literal application of that concept, then the implication would be that Nezek is rishus. And we have other examples of this as well. However, in all cases, this doesn't really seal the deal. It doesn't definitively determine that Tashlumin is based on Isurin. Because, I'm not going to go into each detail, but even though we use the expression Onesh, Aveira, Risha, it's very conceivable, if you understand the full range of views on Kamalei B'drabim Minei, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, ein onsh min adin, that these principles apply, you know, in a situation where, you know, there's a kind of an eclipsing, you know, situation, ein onsh min adin, you do a much greater, you know, action, and it kind of eclipses the minor action that you do. Ein shliach hadvar aveira, you command someone to do something over which you have no control. Aveira is a great example, you know, of that. Ein onshin min adin, you know, you're trying to rely on your intellect to come to a legal conclusion, which is consequential, and you have to be careful about doing that without, you know, further guidance, you know, from the Torah itself. So while the phrase onesh, aveira, rasha, risha are used, it's conceivable, machlokas harishonim, that these terms have a broader meaning. My time is getting so. So let me go back to what I think is Shitas HaRambam. The Rambam actually quotes the Isser of Nezek, you know, in two places. And let me just explain what I think his Shita is. We'll have to leave it at that for now. In Perakei Halacha Aleph is the first time that the Rambam uses this expression. And as we said before, like, why hold out till Perakei? That's very atypical in his presentation. So the Rambam says, Behema Shahosa Roa. I should really just check if my watch is correct, because I don't want to. Is it really 4:10 now? Okay. Behema Shahosa Roa, Upirsha Benichisa Besados and Bekromim, Alpha Pisha Dain Lo Zika Matir and Vibaleha, Master Vibaleha, sorry, Gimel Pa'amim, Imlo Shamar Behemto Velo Mena Miliros. Yesh Rishus Lebala Sada Lishkot Osa Shkita Kshera. The Omer Lebaleha Bo Michru Basar Shalachem. Why? Mipnei She'asur LaAdam LaHazik Ulishalim Mashiyizik. That's the big statement of the Rama. Afilu Ligrom HaNezek Asur. What is this case? So if you look at the Gemara Daf Chav Gimel in Baba Kama, it's a case where somebody's animals are grazing in someone else's field, and the Gemara says these animals also could serve a good meal if you shafted them. They're all made with shmita. And if you warn the fellow, you know, your animals are about to do harm on my field, once, twice, three times, etc., and he doesn't listen to you, you can take actions in your own hand. You can shaft these animals, and, you know, even if it's not marketplace or market day, you know, you can provide the economic equivalent of the animal in a way that also saves your field. That's the Gemara. However, the way Balei Tosfos understand the Gemara, and the way the Ravid understands the Gemara, the Ravid says, Omer Avraham, the Rambam reached beyond here. The Rambam, Dvar malolo lo nemru b'gemara, ela b'izi d'shuka she'ondos l'shchita ve'en lehem roa, avo mishi yeshlo eder shal behemos ein shochten kol edro, ela im yazik li'olem yishalim b'lo shemasra. So the Ravid says, listen, if there's no economic downside, that's what the case of the Gemara is. Otherwise, you can't take a preemptive strike, and cause somebody an economic loss because he's threatening to destroy your property. What you need to do is wait till he destroys your property, then hire a good lawyer and bring him to court and get the compensation for the property. You have no right to launch a preemptive strike. The Rambam Shita is based on probably the precedent of Rav Haigon, although there's some differences between the presentations. But basically, the idea of the Rambam is as follows. What the Rambam is telling us, and that's why I believe the Rambam introduces the Isser in this particular halacha. What the Rambam is saying is mostly Nezikin is based on quid pro quo, on fairness, on equality. And if you're compensating, then even without Isurim, Nezek is just the Chiyuv Tashlumin. That's what it is. However, there are circumstances in which Nezek, just like we began with, Haimad Deboil and Havach Hasida, go beyond the quid pro quo, beyond the Rashi. From the perspective of fairness alone, you can't cause someone an economic loss because he's about to damage your property. You have to wait till the damage takes place and then get the equal value. However, you also have the right not to be put in jeopardy to begin with. No one has the right to damage your property. It's not just an economic. If it was a pure economic issue, then there can't be any discrepancy between the amounts, and you can't launch a preemptive strike. But if you have the right for the preservation and protection of your own property, and if other people have the obligation to limit their own conduct, you know, not just to compensate when they damage, but they're obligated not to damage, then a preemptive strike becomes your right. Moshe l'mad over dome. The Rambam has a very famous shita about kosheya kemazit. The Rambam says that the shomer chinam is only chai b'pshia. And the Rambam explains that, he's trying to explain why there's no p'tur of karka and so on, avadim. He says, posheya is kemazik. And all the Rishonim say, it can't be, there's a lot of evidence that posheya is not a real mazik. The Nesiva says, it's more like a grumma. You know, it's negligence, it's what you don't do. That doesn't qualify, you know, in Hilchos Nezikin as a grumma. As a maisa. But the Rambam's view of posheya kemazik is based on a context. A shomer accepts a certain responsibility, and you rely on him. And that background, that foundation, redefines and realigns what constitutes responsibility. What is passivity when you haven't accepted, and people aren't relying on you, and you haven't accepted responsibility, becomes an act not of omission, but of commission, when people do rely upon you, and you have made an extra commitment. In other words, context, the expectation, the rights of others, transforms sometimes actions. And it's in those contexts that the Rambam underscores Isser. When the Rambam speaks about Ein Shliach, the Dvar Avera, in Parakei, Hilchos Chovel, Halacha Yigimel, and in Parakei in general, that's where the Rambam speaks in Chovel about the Isser, the Rambam says that, after all, this person, the Mishaleach, is a Rasha. He's a Rasha, but Ein Shliach Ledvar Aveira, and therefore, even though he's a Shutef, I'm not going to read it inside because time is running out, even though he's a Shutef in this Pu'ula of Nezek, nonetheless, he's Pater because Ein Shliach Ledvar Aveira. So when you think about it, all of a sudden the Rambam is speaking about Aveira and Nisurin. What's going on? The answer is, in this case, the issue isn't whether there'll be Tashlumin. Somebody did an act of Nezek. There's a mishaleach, there's a shliach. Hakol modim, there has to be compensation. For that, you don't need to say aveira. But if you try to figure out who is the perpetrator, who's the responsible party, is it the mishaleach or the shliach, now you're talking about a different issue. And that is, who has the primary responsibility to make sure that damage doesn't take place, separate from the quid pro quo tashlumin equivalence that we're speaking about. When the Rambam speaks about tshuva, in Perek Aleph Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Beis Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Hei Hilchos Chovel Mazik, the Rambam says, Nezek requires tshuva. However, says the Rambam, the tshuva of Nezikin is different than the tshuva of Chabala. The tshuva of Chabala, even after you've paid him what you owe him, you still require pius. You have to look at the Rambams. I sent them out in the Maran Bakalas. And that is true for Geneva, and that is true for Gezela as well. Nezikin is also an Iser, and therefore it also requires tshuva. Although the Tashlumim constitutes the tshuva in the case of Nezikin. Because while Geneva and Gezela and Chavala are considered to be a personal affront, a personal attack, Nezikin is a monetary attack. But notwithstanding its status as a monetary attack, and the differences even between Mazik and Chovel, never mind Mazik and Chovel and Gneva, Gezela, and Rotzeach, nonetheless, there is an aspect of Iser according to the Rambam. And for this reason, also, I think it's very interesting, with this I'll conclude, but the, you know, there's a discussion about the status of a katan when it comes to Kabbalah, Niskim Mamon, and Mazik. Mishnah says about Kabbalah that P'yasanra, that, you know, if a child, you know, beats you up, he does bodily damage, that, you know, he gets off because he's a katan. Question is, when he grows up and he's over bar mitzvah, is he then obligated to pay, you know, or not? So Rashi says, Baba Kama, with regard to garmi, that a katan does garmi, he has to pay when he's older. That's Shittas Rashi. And the Or Zeruah says, well, if that's true for mazik, it's probably true for Kabbalah. But if you look at the Rambam clearly doesn't think this is true for Kabbalah. The Rambam distinguishes between Isha and Eved on the one hand and Katan on the other. It's clear that according to the Rambam in Kabbalah, even when a Katan becomes older, he still doesn't have to pay for the Kabbalah he did when he was a child. At the same time, the evidence of the Gemara, which Rashi was zeroing in on, implies that when it comes to mazik, there is such an obligation. This is the Rambam Shita. There is a selective din of Iser in mazik. It expands the frontiers or the category of hezek to situations where quid pro quo doesn't cover it. And in that sense, it belongs in both cases in Parakei of Chovel and Parakei of Niske Mamon. Because Niske Mamon and Mazik is a shiluk, it's an integration of, on the one hand, a monetary obligation, but a monetary obligation which, under certain conditions, is expanded by the obligation of Kedoshim Tiyu, of Tzelem Elokim, of the aspiration of being a chosid. Thank you. There's much more to talk about, obviously, but od chazon lamoed.